This guy does a great job with an amazing website. I look at it all the time. It's Ref Countdown. This guy's the managing editor. He is Shane Hallam. Shane, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
How was the last couple days for you? Because I know you probably didn't sleep much.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind. I think I had a tweet for every player in the draft. I'd watched every player that was drafted. And almost all the undrafted free agents. So I've been just tweeting out some scouting reports, and it was fun to see all the work pay off.
We have your colleague on, Brian Bosarge. He also does a great job. And I posed this question to him, so I'll do it to you. How long did you work on preparing for the 2024 draft and then finally finishing up this weekend?
Like, how many hours in total did I work? That's a number that's unfathomable to me. I mean, some of these players, Caleb Williams, for example, I started watching in high school and started my notes page on him in high school. So I've been watching these guys. The hours would be over 1,000 probably on this class.
Are you already looking towards 25 now?
I have a 7-round mock draft on draftcountdown.com. So you can see all 7 rounds. Who I predict will be there for 2025.
You're a wild man. I love it. I love the 25 already. Let's go over the biggest thing I took out of this. The 6 quarterbacks in round 1, first 12 picks. What did that tell you about the NFL right now with that many quarterbacks that high?
It told me some people are really desperate to get quarterbacks. I graded 3 of those quarterbacks, 4 of them as first round picks, 3 as top 10 picks. So I was down for Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Drake May, and fine with J.J. McCarthy from Michigan going in that 10-11 spot a little early to me, but I understand the need. But Michael Penix Jr. at 8 to the Falcons, and Bo Nix at 12 to the Broncos, to me, were massive reaches of teams trying to outsmart the system. I think in the Broncos' case, it was, this the guy that fits our system. We're going to get him, even though he has a lot of limitations. We'll make it work. And I think for the Falcons, it was just, hey, this is the best pure thrower in the draft. You know, we have Kirk Cousins. Let's bring him in. Boom, we're set for 10 years. And instead, I think both made a huge mistake that will not pay dividends in time.
Where did you have Penix Jr. going in your mock draft then?
I am going in the 2nd round to the Raiders. My overall, I had him on my big board at about 43. So, well outside the 1st round. I thought the limitations on him under pressure that we saw in the national championship for Penix is a big problem. You know, he ran a 4.5 at his pro day. He ran for 8 yards this year in college football. He is not a player that knows how to navigate the pocket and wants to take off and run, maybe because he's had 2 ACL injuries on the same knee. I just think there's so many questions with him that things could go wrong very quickly. And it's nice that he can sit and learn. We've seen that work out plenty, and it might work out okay for Michael Penix in Atlanta, but I think it's just a big reach when you could win the division and possibly be an NFC contender this year to draft a guy that's 24 years old and going to sit for at least 2 years, maybe 4 years, and you won't even get to see him until he's 26, 28.
Shane, I don't know about you. I was hosting my draft party, and it was kind of chalk with a lot of those picks, and the energy wasn't really there. When Atlanta made that move, it woke people up. Did it wake you up when they took that pick at 8?
Yeah. I mean, that was the wake-up moment. I was like, oh, okay, this is going to go how I think it's going to go. It's going to be pretty much how we think it's going to go. And then when they took him, like, we could throw out the board. I thought for sure. I thought there's no chance Bo Nix goes in the 1st round. Once Penix went at 8, I was like, oh, man, this is happening. You know, it's going. So it did wake me up. I mean, it made it fun. And that's the NFL draft is about. One thing I always say, I never say 0% chance in the NFL draft, because anything can happen.
As a big Bears fan, as all of my listeners know, I know it drives them crazy, but when Penix was there and he went to Atlanta, I started yelling, get up to the board, get your pick in, and go get that wide receiver from Washington, Rome Odunze. What did you think of the Bears then, getting Caleb Williams and Odunze in the top 10?
Just an absolute masterclass in how to utilize having 2 top 10 picks. Obviously, it fell to them a little bit, but they didn't outsmart themselves and keep Justin Fields. They didn't outsmart themselves and say, nah, we need some more defense. We're going to pass on Romeo Odunze. Nah, I mean, you are setting up that fresh rookie quarterback for success, and that was the problem with Justin Fields. He didn't set him up for success. Now they have a solid offensive line. They signed Keenan Allen. Obviously, they traded for DJ Moore last year. Now you have Rome Odunze, one of the top wide receivers in this class, who's big and going to be able to fill that second role down the line. You signed DeAndre Swift. I mean, I think the Bears offseason may be the best in the NFL in total.
Is it unrealistic, the expectations right now for Caleb Williams? Because, like, he hasn't even played a game yet for the franchise.
I mean, look, the expectations are always going to be high. I think for every number one overall quarterback, the expectations are high. I think the hype on Caleb Williams maybe was a little bit much. I think people, I love Caleb Williams. He's the number three quarterback I have ever graded since I started doing this in 2004. It's really high praise. But the expectations just are through the roof because it was always generational. We can't, you know, he's going to come out on fire. He's still a young quarterback. He's going to learn. He's only had 3 years of college. He transferred in there. But they have the pieces in place where they don't have to just rely on Caleb Williams to win games for them and be Superman. And that's what he had to do at USC. I think it's going to be a big change and a good thing for him.
What does it say about the NFL? What was the first defensive player taken? 14, 15? What does that say exactly, Shane?
It was a weaker defensive class as a whole, but I think ultimately it shows you how the NFL runs through the offense nowadays. You have to have a top-tier offense. You have to have a quarterback, protect the quarterback, and have that quarterback be able to throw. And that's every single pick in the top 14, where guys to protect, the best pass protectors on the offensive line, wide receivers, and quarterbacks. That's what we got. That's what's going to be most important, even when you have to reach a little bit for some of those positions. It's going to be more important than an edge rusher nowadays.
If you are, like you said, you're already looking at your 25 mock draft, Shane. If you are a quarterback or a wide receiver and you're on the fence, oh, should I go back to school? Would your advice be, no, go to the draft. You're going to get picked high now moving forward.
I think if you have a decent grade from that underclassmen committee that gives you grades, a lot of times we've seen players, I didn't get a round one grade from the committee, I'm not leaving. And I think that's a mistake. If you get a day two grade, basically that's their grades, round one, day two, neither. If you get a round two, day two grade, I think you go. I think you got to go because I would almost guarantee you J.J. McCarthy did not get a round one grade from the committee. He probably got a day two grade. Mm. He made the smart decision to leave. So I think that's what you got to do now is say, if they think I'm going to go in the top 100 picks, I'm a quarterback, I'm a receiver, I'm probably going first round.
Will a running back go in the top 10 of round one moving forward?
I don't think it's happening next year, you know, and I think it's going to be a little while before we see it happen again. It will. But you need to not just be the old, you know, run between the tackles and run 30 times a game running back. We need a Bijan Robinson who catches the ball in the backfield and is a weapon that can line up in the slot and do those type of things. And that's just so rare to get, especially with the transfer portal and what's happening in college football. I think it's going to be another 5 to 7 years before we see a running back go that high again.
Yeah, because I look at, what was it, Saquon Barkley. What'd he go, like 2 overall in his draft? No way. There's no way, Shane, someone's going to go number 2 overall for running back. That can't happen, right? No way.
I would be shocked if we see that again. You know, we see the top 3 pick again is going to be extremely difficult to come to fruition. I think Bijan at 8 was almost as good as it gets nowadays. Top 5 is going to be a really hard sell for a GM to tell their owner, like, yeah, we're taking a running back here. We're going to run the football. That's that. No more. You can't just do that.
All right, I have to ask this before we get to your winners and losers. And we're here with Shane Hallam, does a great job with Draft Countdown. What was Buffalo thinking where you're trading with Kansas City and then letting Kansas City take wide receiver? Why would you trade with Kansas City under any circumstance moving forward?
Look, you're trying to get the best value that you can and from whoever that is. It's funny because I think in recent years, teams have stopped caring who they're trading with. We used to never see trades between two division teams, and now T.J. Hockenson is traded from the Lions to the Vikings. You know, I think teams are done caring about who they're trading with and just worrying about number one, worrying about themselves. And I think the Bills probably had a number of receivers, including Worthy, on the same tier. I would guess Xavier Worthy, Xavier Leggett, Ladd McConkey and Keon Coleman. They probably were comfortable with all of those guys. Don't move down to 33, and then whoever wants to move up can move up, because we're going to get one of the players that we want. And obviously, the Chiefs really want a Worthy. Now, if Xavier Worthy starts burning them big time in an AFC Championship game, then you're going to hear a lot of criticism.
Do you like that FSU Coleman? I saw him play. He is big and he is fast. Did you like that for Buffalo?
I didn't love it. I think it's about where he was going to go because of the athletic skill, the deep striding, the ability to get deep. Week one last year, we saw him torch LSU, just absolutely crush them. It's like, oh, this guy's legitimate. Then we learned throughout the year LSU has the worst Power 5 defense in all of college football. And there were a lot of games where he disappeared because Coleman doesn't necessarily have the ability to understand how to beat zone coverage and space himself from corners and safeties. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, but this is the ideal situation. You put him with a Josh Allen, say, hey, go down the field, go up and get it. That's what Keon Coleman can do. So I think the fit is the best possible situation, even if I wasn't the biggest fan of the player.
Did you like Ricky Pearsall going in the first round late to San Francisco, wide receiver from Florida?
I was surprised he went that high, yes. But I do love that pick because San Francisco was not going to get him in round two. And I don't think there's a better fit for the San Francisco 49ers than Pearsall with the clean footwork, the athleticism, the way he can get off the line. I mean, this is a wide receiver that you can plug in if they do trade Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel. You can plug in right in the Shanahan system, and he's going to produce immediately. And if they don't trade those guys, Ricky Pearsall one-on-one in the slot is going to be super dangerous.
All right, I want to ask you about the three teams in Florida, if we could do this real quick, here with Shane Hallam with Draft Countdown. Okay, I think the Jaguars, all right, they took an LSU wide receiver, right, Thomas. Did they just keep taking LSU players? What happened exactly?
Hey, LSU was a good team this year, so you might as well keep going. Yeah, they took three LSU players. They got Mason Smith, a former five-star recruit, who he's one of those classic, like, monster when he's working hard, and then you see about 10% of his plays where the guy's lazy as all get up. So I think if you can motivate him, he's going to be really good in the interior. And I like pairing him with Jordan Jefferson, kind of the nose tackle there for LSU. We saw that be the best part of the LSU defense. When they actually held teams, it was because those two tackles were in tandem, working both super athletic. So why not pair them back together? I like when teams do that.
Okay, what did you think of the Dolphins? It was very kind of quiet. You know, not a lot of sexy big picks, but what did you think of the Dolphins class overall?
I thought it was a solid group for the picks that they had. They didn't necessarily come in with a ton of picks, but had some needs. They get Trop Robinson, 9.99 athlete. If you watch him against Michigan, you say this guy's a top 10 pick. Some of the other games, you know, he's beat up. He was a little bit hurt this year. I think they can turn him into something. But I really like the round two pick of Patrick Paul, the offensive tackle from Houston. He's a mammoth, 6'8". Long arms, he can move. He's someone you could use in a variety of ways, and you need to protect Tua. And I also like, you know, it was costly. They traded a future third, but getting Jalen Wright out of Tennessee, there's not a better system fit for Jalen Wright. Every touchdown he scored for Tennessee this year was over 50 yards, and we saw what the Miami Dolphins offense and their running backs did last year. You pair him in the future with Devonta Chain, and I think it's going to be just a track show for the Dolphins.
Okay, what did you think of the Buccaneers draft then as well?
The Buccaneers is a draft I didn't love. I think it's fine, but just nothing that screamed to me like, oh, you're getting better. You know, Graham Barton at center, solid player, play tackle. He can play every position on the offensive line. He's versatile. He'll be fine for you. You know, Chris Braswell at Alabama had some good games, had some good numbers. I don't think he's a world beater. He's not going to be a Pro Bowl edge rusher. Same for the rest of the picks. I mean, I think the rest of their players are fine, kind of backups, number two guys that are going to complement and help you, whereas I think the Bucs needed a little more of a splash. They needed a really stud edge rusher or need to really help themselves in the secondary, and I just don't think that happened.
Overall, just going with your gut, what team won the draft? Do you have an overall best grade like that?
It's tough because I think a lot of teams did well. My absolute favorite, I would say, was the Los Angeles Rams. I thought they played the board really well, and it's kind of weird to say because they haven't had a first-round pick in almost 20 years. But they drafted Jared Verse out of OSU in the first round, a player that I had as a top 13 player in this draft. Got him at 19. I think he is that stud pass rusher that the Buccaneers could have really used. And then they get a replacement for Aaron Donald in round two and Braden Fisk, who is absolutely maybe had the most dominant game that I saw in that ACC championship game for Florida State. I like Blake Corum, the running back from Michigan, very productive there. Cameron Kitchens, the safety, fell because he is not a super athlete, but a really good instinctual safety. And then even in day three, I mean, they're drafting guys that I thought should have went borderline day two in round five and six. I got a kicker, which they desperately needed. I think the Rams just had a really solid draft that's going to help them continue to be on top in that division.
Who had the worst draft?
It's always tough. I think Atlanta is certainly up there. We talked about Penix and them. I'll go a little bit differently. I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. Was not a draft that I loved. I'm not a big J.C. Latham fan, the offensive tackle from Alabama. They took at pick 7. I think he's fine, but not a top 10 pick, game-changing pass protector. And then they took Devondre Sweat, the D tackle out of Texas, in the second. I thought very early for a player who's had alcohol problems early in his college career, told teams he was over it, then just got a DUI a month before the draft. I thought their day three was very uninspiring. The only pick I really liked was Cedric Gray, the linebacker from North Carolina, but even that is not game-changing. Once again, the Titans, a team that I think needed a big shot in the arm to help Will Levis, and I don't think they did it.
What about Washington as the bonus, where they had like 10 picks? Did they do well in this draft?
I feel like it's hard to have 10 picks and look bad. It's always going to look good when you have that volume. And you look at their roster, literally they have changed over 50% of their roster from last year, which I think is smart. That's what you should do if you're a coach and GM coming in for the first time. I think they did well. They took my number two quarterback where they needed to take him, Jaden Daniels. They got a player that I had rated as a first-round pick in Jerzon Newton out of Illinois. They got him in round two. And then they took, I think, solid value at positions of need, got themselves another starting corner, got a starting tight end in round two, took some solid players, athletic players on day three, like Jordan McGee, the linebacker out of Temple, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, the edge rusher out of Notre Dame in the seventh. I thought that was great. I think they actually used the picks well and moved around the board well to position themselves and not go too crazy.
The big loser is Carolina in my book. How they didn't have that number one pick. How about that is my answer?
Yeah.
Can that?
You can't go wrong with that answer.
you really can't. Shane, what should we check out with Draft Countdown now as a recap from this past weekend?
Hey, go to draftcountdown.com. You can see some of the recaps that we have from this draft. We'll be coming out with a team-by-team breakdowns here in the next couple weeks if you want to see how your team did and teams in your division did. And I'm already on 2025. I have my seven-round 2025 mock draft, my top 150 player big board for that draft. So start peeking at next year while you can.
Oh, and Carolina still has to give the Bears a second-round pick next year. Just think about that. Look, what?
I was doing my mock, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, no. What are they doing? Come on, man. This has got to be over soon.
No, it goes on forever. Shane Hallam, my man, thank you so much for coming on, and have a great week, all right?
Well, thanks so much.